From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Countless activities in New Hampshire are on pause until early April, but now the Centers for Disease Control says it could be a lot longer than that, recommending yesterday a nationwide halt in gatherings of more than 50 people for 8 weeks. Meanwhile, federal policy is scrambling to keep up from both a health perspective and an economic perspective. And so today in The Exchange, we'll spend the first part of our show with New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. Later in the hour, we'll find out how food is getting to those who are most vulnerable in the Granite State. That's what we're covering today in The Exchange. And as we practice social distancing here at NHPR, all our guests will be remote for the foreseeable future. And today, I myself, I'm hosting remotely as well. Also, we're unable to take your calls. We apologize for that, but we really do want to hear from you. So send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also use Facebook or Twitter. And Senator Shaheen joins us from Capitol Hill. And Senator Shaheen, we're very grateful for your time. Thank you so much.
Well, nice to be with you, Laura. I know this is an uncertain time for folks, and certainly we're all thinking about people who are directly affected because they have been laid off from work, because they have a family member or themselves who have contracted the coronavirus, because they're not sure what's going to happen with their kids and getting back to school. So it's a lot. There are a lot of reasons why people are feeling unsettled right now.
Well, and you hinted at the stimulus package, which we'll definitely talk about in a moment. But first, let's talk about the health aspects of this. What's your role, Senator Shaheen, as a U.S. senator, to make sure that our health systems have what they need to take care of people who become ill? We don't want to end up like Italy or Iran.
Well, that's right. And the most important thing right now we can do, and that's why the guidelines that have been issued by the administration, by the Centers for Disease Control, by the governor, and others are to wash your hands, to, if you're sick, to stay home, to not go out in crowds, to stay out of places where you're in groups of, actually the president said 10 or more yesterday. It's because what we want to do is to slow down the rate of spread of the virus, because what we don't want is what's happened in Italy, which is that hospitals are overwhelmed with patients and having to make life or death decisions because they don't have the equipment, they don't have the medical personnel that they need. So if we can do that and avoid that happening to our hospitals and to our healthcare workers, that's really important. And the first thing that we did in Congress 2 weeks ago was to pass a comprehensive package to address the medical situation with the coronavirus. So,
good. Tell us what was included in that. Yeah, that's a big concern.
Significant funding, about $3 billion to address research and treatment for vaccination and medical treatment to respond to the coronavirus. It included $500 million to address personal protective equipment. So that's the masks and the sort of white disposable. They're not really uniforms, but
gowns,
cover-ups,
so to speak.
Yet,
yeah,
that
right.
You see with healthcare personnel. It included support for states. So New Hampshire got $4.9 million last week to respond. It's so that we can look at what we need to do going forward, an initial investment in that. And that goes to the Department of Health and Human Services, and they will determine how that money is spent. There is also a separate pool of funding that allows states to get reimbursed for monies that have already been spent. That's been an issue in New Hampshire where they went ahead and started taking money out of other funds so they could respond to the coronavirus quickly. And the significant challenge at this point is the testing and making sure that the tests are widespread and available to people who need them. And that's been the real challenge and the holdup. And I think it took the CDC and other, the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, longer than many of us thought it should to make decisions about opening up to the private sector so that now we have LabCorp and Quest who are able to do testing. Now we have hospitals and hospital systems that are able to do testing on their own. That took a while to make that decision.
It did take a while. Yeah, we heard from a doctor yesterday, Senator Shaheen, who said he had access to Quest testing kits, but not enough protective gear to welcome patients.
Right.
For that testing, very frustrating to hear from him. We also heard from other listeners just yesterday who have loved ones with symptoms that seem pretty suspect, but they can't get testing. So it just seems like everywhere I look, I see bottlenecks. I don't see this thing moving.
Well, that's right. And as I said, it took too long for those efforts to get ramped up. Hopefully they are happening now. And the
funding why is that, Senator Shaheen? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's so frustrating. And
well,
we've
I
got a survey from listeners who just are telling us like they're not getting what they need. So what took so long?
I think it took a long time at the federal level for the administration to make the decisions they needed to make to open up. I don't know why it took that long. There are lots of speculation about that, but the fact is they didn't allow private providers like Quest and LabCorp to come in. They didn't allow the testing by private hospitals and other university hospitals, and that slowed things down. And there was a lot of confusion about who you call if you need a test and
right.
what you should do. And that hopefully some of that confusion now has been made more clear to people, and we are beginning to see some of the drive-by facilities, because one challenge has been people going into emergency rooms. That is not what we want to happen. If you're feeling ill and you think you have the symptoms of the coronavirus, call your healthcare provider first and let them, they will tell you what to do. Now, there are some hospitals in New Hampshire. The National Guard has been at their facility in Manchester. They're allowing drive-by tests, and that means people don't have to go into an emergency room and possibly put at risk the personnel and the other people who are in the emergency rooms. So we need to get that ramped up as quickly as possible and make sure that people have the information they need and that the tests can get done.
All right, listeners, again, for the first part of our show today, we're talking with New Hampshire's senior U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. We're looking at some of the federal policies toward coronavirus, both in terms of health and the economy. A little bit later in the hour, we'll talk about how Granite Staters who are food insecure are getting the food they need during these disruptive times. You can join us with an email. We do not have the capacity to take your phone calls today. We apologize, but we are practicing social distancing here at NHPR, and so everyone is remote today. We'd love to hear from you by email, though. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook. You can use Twitter. Senator Shaheen, Elizabeth wrote us, "I strongly support quick Senate passage of the strengthened version of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act." Elizabeth says, "It's important to ensure that no one, including immigrants and undocumented people, goes without food and that everyone can get tested and medical equipment." Elizabeth, thank you for writing in. And Senator Shaheen, so what is the strengthened version of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act that Elizabeth writes about?
Well, it is very important that we pass it. I support that, Elizabeth. And we've been waiting for the final package to come out of the House. There were some technical changes that they needed to do before the Senate could get it. I think we now have it in the Senate, so I'm hoping we are going to act on it soon, and it does a number of things. It provides emergency paid sick leave to workers who get infected with the coronavirus and have to take time off from work, either for them or to take care of a sick family member. It reimburses small businesses for providing paid sick leave. It provides additional funding for Medicaid in New Hampshire to cover and other states to cover the costs of health care as a result of the virus. It provides nutrition assistance to people who need it, to students who are not in school and so need those school lunches, to food banks, to programs, the WIC program that helps mothers and infants, to senior citizens who need Meals on Wheels. So there is a whole package of food assistance that's part of it to make sure that people can get the food they need so they don't go hungry. It requires insurance companies, Medicare, Medicaid, and TRICARE for our veterans to cover the full cost of testing for coronavirus. And implements measures to make sure that those without insurance can get tests and have those costs fully covered. So it's designed to both provide help to people who are affected because they may be infected with the coronavirus, but also to those people whose workplaces have shut down, who may need sick leave, who need food assistance. It's designed to do a whole range of things to try and help, particularly the most vulnerable. And Laura, that's not the only economic package there will be. I think there is going to be another one. There is work beginning on that now. So hopefully we can help not just people immediately affected because they have someone themselves or someone in their families who get the coronavirus, but also because of the economic impact that we're seeing because of the virus on businesses, on people's employment, on a whole range of industries that are affected.
Well, and Teresa sent us an email who says, as an advocate for our homeless in our region, I urge Senators Shaheen and Hassan to add provisions for our homeless and those in danger of becoming homeless. So, Teresa, thank you for that. And I also want to let Teresa and Elizabeth know that later in the hour, we will be focusing on those folks who are food insecure and how they're getting the food they need during these times. But I want to ask you about something you said in that stimulus package, Senator Shaheen, emergency paid sick leave, and that has definitely been an issue for folks. How is that going to work? Where's the money going to come from?
Well, we're going to cover that at the federal level.
So businesses don't have to pull that out of their own pockets?
We're reimbursing the cost of that paid sick leave to businesses.
I see.
If they don't already provide it.
There've also been provisions that people can apply for unemployment insurance and get that right away, no questions asked. Is that folded into this stimulus bill as well, Senator Shaheen?
It is. There is an expansion of unemployment benefits as well.
Okay. And Congress and the president have, as you know, in recent years, approved very large budgets with very large deficits. Economists have been saying for a long time that when there's a crisis, the government won't have much wiggle room. They've been saying you shouldn't deficit spend when times are good. How much is Congress painted into a corner here now because of the spending of earlier eras?
Well, I think the critical thing right now, Laura, is for us to do everything we can to respond to the coronavirus, to address what we need to around the illness and then around the economic implications. And that should be our priority right now.
Don't worry about the deficit for now, then.
I think we need to worry about the deficit, but not right now. Right now, what we've got to do is respond to what's happening in families with their health, and in the economy and the health of the economy.
As the U.S. Capitol itself has been trying to mitigate the potential spread of coronavirus, and we're all trying to practice social distancing, as I said, we're practicing it ourselves here at NHPR. I am hosting remotely today. What impact has that had on you and your ability to do the work that you need to do, Senator Shaheen, to tackle the health and economic impacts of this?
Well, senators are here this week because it's very important that we get these other pieces of legislation that are responding to the situation in the country right now, that we get those done so that people know they can count on help when they need it. So we are here. Almost all of the employees in my office and most offices in the Senate are working remotely. We have a couple of people who are here answering phones, and we have some other folks who are here because they have particular issues that they're working on and they need to be here. My legislative assistant who works on health care is here because he's staying on top of what we're doing around the health care response to the coronavirus. But most folks, both here and in New Hampshire, are working remotely, as I think people are trying to do in businesses across New Hampshire and across the country, to do what the guidance suggests, which is stay out of large crowds, work from home. You know, somebody sent me an email yesterday and pointed out that for many of our parents and grandparents who were called to respond to World War II, and the country did it with great unanimity and cooperation, and everybody was all in. And he pointed out that, you know, we're being called to respond, and what we're being asked to do is to stay inside and sit on the couch. So
yeah.
We don't want everybody sitting on the couch the whole time, but I think it's an important comparison. This is about trying to ensure that we don't infect other people who may be at risk.
Ted wrote us from Hanover. He says there are still too many impediments to broader use of telemedicine in New Hampshire. Ted asks, isn't it time to push this forward aggressively on a state and federal level with so many people homebound? Can you address that briefly, Senator Shaheen? And then I do want to ask you about the upcoming elections.
Yes, and in fact, the first package that dealt with the medical response to the coronavirus included significant provisions to address telehealth. And both funding for that and some provisions. One of the challenges has been that if you're at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Hospital and you're trying to do a video into Vermont around issues through your telehealth connection, that if you're a doctor only licensed in New Hampshire, you were prohibited from doing that. But under the Emergency Stafford Act that the president invoked, that is no longer a requirement. So
okay, Ted,
it allows medical personnel to cross state lines to address emergencies.
It's a good question. And my last question for you, Senator Shaheen, and I know you have a action-packed day, so I won't keep you. Senators Amy Klobuchar and Ron Wyden are going to introduce a bill next week that will, quoting them here, guarantee every voter a secure mail-in paper ballot and help states cover the cost. They say vote by mail is a time-tested, reliable way for Americans to exercise their constitutional right, and it is the right response to this crisis. What do you think, Senator Shaheen? Do you agree? Time for a vote by mail.
Well, we know that there are states that do vote by mail. I think Oregon does only vote by mail, and I think particularly in times of crisis like this, where we've already seen Ohio postpone their primary election today because of the coronavirus threat, it's important to have an alternative for voters. This is something that I understand is passed in the House and is going on to the Senate and our legislature in New Hampshire. So I think there are very good reasons why this would be a good thing to make available to our citizens.
So if this Klobuchar-Wyden bill comes up next week, which they hope to do, it sounds like you're a vote in favor.
Well, I haven't actually seen the legislation. One of the things I learned early is not to commit until you actually see the fine print.
But fair enough.
Certainly the idea, I think, is a good one, and I support the idea, and I think we need to look at that, and I'm hopeful that it's something I can support.
Senator Shaheen, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it, and we hope to check back in with you perhaps in a week or so. Thanks a
Great.
Lot.
Good to be with you, Laura.
That's New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, a Democrat and former governor of New Hampshire. Now, coming up, we will find out how Granite State agencies who provide food for the needy are dealing with all the disruptions of these times. You can send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter. And stay with us. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, an estimated 1 in 9 Granite Staters are at any time food insecure, meaning they're not sure where their next meal might be coming from, and about 12% of children live in food insecure environments. Now, with coronavirus affecting the operation of regular social services, there's even more uncertainty around this. We're checking in on this for the rest of the hour today, and we'll take your questions, too. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can tweet us. You can comment on Facebook. And listeners, for today, we're unable to take calls. We do apologize for that. We're all working remotely to practice social distancing, and that has tied up some of our technical capacity. But again, we really do want to hear from you. So you can email us, exchange at nhpr.org. We have three guests. Eileen Laponis is with us, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Food Bank. Eileen, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Michael Reinke, Executive Director of the Nashua Soup Kitchen. And Michael, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
And also with us, Deb Anthony, Executive Director of Gather NH, a food pantry serving the Seacoast. And Deb, welcome. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, we've been asking listeners to share how they've been preparing for coronavirus on our survey at nhpr.org. And a lot of people who responded said, I have tons of extra food around. I have stocked up on food and drugs. We've spent what is typically 2 months worth of groceries. We've been ordering food and dry goods online. So that is what we've been hearing from some of our listeners to our survey. That certainly reflects the stories we've seen in the media, how there's been a run on staples at the grocery store. But Eileen, to you first, how does this natural instinct to stock up affect your operations at the food bank, Eileen?
Well, luckily, it really hasn't. We are in the currently, we are in a relatively strength position with our inventory. It's very strong and healthy. And the supply chain, as it stands now, is still, the pipeline is full. It's healthy. I think the grocery store experiences that we've experienced the past few days are just a hiccup. And we are in a position of strength, and we continue to anticipate to be that in that position of strength. And we're just curious about how we're going to continue to fund it. Also, in the short term, what we're experiencing is with the run on the grocery stores, there is a lot less salvage for us, but we anticipate that once they restock, that will continue as well. But weeks ago, we started ordering. We released a significant number of funds to order ourselves, and so we are in this position of strength because of that, and we've also been doubling our meal production in anticipation of an increase in demand on that from our agencies.
That's interesting.
Model's
yeah.
changing. We're not accepting
sure.
volunteers here at the food bank. We want to keep our staff. We're not a state agency, but we feel like to some extent we are first responders and we need to stay healthy. We're experiencing social distancing, practicing social distancing with our agencies for pickup.
I wanted to ask you about the sort of personnel end of it, but I'm very interested, and pardon me for interrupting, I'm very interested in what you said about your supply chain. So it seems like you have different supply chains from the regular grocery store. So these runs on pasta and toilet paper haven't affected you.
Not yet. And I don't anticipate that they're going to, because like I said,
and
we work with our grocery partners. And we are also in a position where we share a food broker with a number of other regional food banks in New England. And because of her experience and buying power, we get to leverage off each other. We are all in a relative position of strength. I just want the public to know that.
Sure. Good to hear. And Michael and Deb, perhaps Michael, you first. So again, when many people anticipate a crisis, they stock up. But Michael, what about people who can't afford to do that? How do they approach these situations?
Right. So we have a couple of different issues, one of which is we are a community kitchen. We serve breakfast in the morning. We serve dinner at night. And a couple of weeks ago, we said, okay, what do we need to do? We need to wipe down surfaces more. We need to encourage people to stay home if they're sick. We need to give people masks if they're coming in and they need a meal, but they're also not feeling well. last Thursday, we said, okay, what if we might need to go to doing meals to go, but we're probably a couple of weeks out from that. We started doing meals to go last night. So when people are coming in, they're not able to eat here anymore. We give them a meal to go and we send them out. In addition to that, starting next week, we are going to be doing our boxes to go. So generally people, when they come in, they're able to do client choice. Okay, this is what I need in terms of taking food home. Instead, we're going to be doing prepared boxes. People can come pick up a box and go. Again, doing social distancing, limiting how people have limiting contact.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, Michael, you know, given the order that the governor put out last night that restaurants and so forth are only supposed to do takeout, to go and so forth. So you're a soup kitchen. So correct me if I'm wrong, Michael.
Yes.
That typically would mean people come in for dinner and they all sit down and have dinner together and then they leave. It sounds like you can't do that anymore.
Exactly. Last Friday, we had probably over 200 to 300 people come in for breakfast and dinner.
Wow.
Our plan yesterday morning was to limit seating to 40, like take our seating from 120 down to 40, to be able to allow for social distancing, say that people would only have 20 minutes to eat and then we need to turn it over. That was our plan yesterday morning. By 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, everything had changed. We were like, okay, no, we have to go to Meals to Go. You know, here's a sandwich, here's a fruit, here's an energy bar if we have it, here's a boxed drink, and, you know, come on back tomorrow morning.
Wow, that's really interesting. And boy, we all understand that everybody's having to make changes at the very last minute like that. So now you're just doing Meals to Go. Boom, you switched on a dime like that, and that's what you're doing.
We have an awesome staff, and we can make that happen. I would say that the next concern we have is kids. You know, in Nashua, 40%, 4,000 kids in Nashua Public Schools get free or reduced lunch. Those are kids that are not able to make it to the kitchen on their own. One of the things we did 3 years ago is we said, kids are not coming in for meals. We know kids are hungry. So we started doing frozen meals, and we've been distributing them to 6 different schools in the Greater Nashua Public School District. We're going to make those frozen meals available at any place where Nashua Public School District is providing school lunches. So Nashua is providing school lunches at different schools around the district. We're going to have our frozen evening meals that, you know, parents can take home, warm up 3 minutes in the microwave, 8 minutes in the oven, and don't switch those two. And then so we want to make sure that kids have access to food. You know, this is a time when we need to be taking care of the most vulnerable and the most at risk.
Well, and I definitely want to ask all of you about children, but Deb Anthony, I don't want to forget you, Executive Director of Gather NH, a food pantry serving the Seacoast. It was really interesting to hear Michael talk about how he basically had to change the way he ran his organization very quickly. What sorts of turnarounds have you had to do at Gather NH?
Well, thank you, Laura, for asking. We're doing similar things to what you're hearing from Michael. We've done some work around social distancing. So we have a pantry market in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where people can come and shop. It's a free shop model. And then we also have Meals for Kids, which is an on-the-road model. So those two are kind of different. The in-house model that we're using is we're actually sort of getting people to the door, and we're only allowing 2 people in the pantry at the same time. It's a fairly decent-sized pantry market, but it's just the idea of touching and shopping. And our folks have been amazingly receptive, and, you know, they're nervous. You know, I think it's really important. I was talking with my staff yesterday because it's a scary time for everyone, and it's a scary time for the people that volunteer here and work here. And you can imagine a lot of our volunteers are retirees, and we're certainly understanding that some of them are not comfortable coming in, and encourage them not to come in. So we're running on a fairly slim group of people, but we've been just allowing a couple of families in at a time, and everybody has been really good with that. And they get to do their shop, and then they leave, and hopefully it holds them over for the next week. The one thing we've seen, and then on the Meals for Kids, again, that's a mobile program that we do. And we generally only do that during the school vacations and the summer school break, summer break. But we're on the road as of today, and so we'll be serving from Seabrook, Portsmouth, Kittery, Maine, up to Rochester. And we're anticipating seeing anywhere between 700 and 900 children a week.
Wow, that's a lot. And that's a lot of gasoline, too, going to all those homes.
It's a lot. And normally we've been much more about free choice. We set up a farmer's market. People get to shop for what they want. But we're definitely kind of taking the bag it up, box it up. You know, this is your box for the week. We'll see you next week method. Because we're just, one, we have to really consider what we can get and how much food we have. And two, we just want to avoid as much contact as possible in doing that so that everybody's staying safe.
Michael Reinke, Eileen Luponis, Deb Anthony, hold on one moment. I just want to remind our listeners that they can join us. I know that there are people who have questions, comments, and concerns about this topic. We're looking for the rest of the hour today in exchange about how people who need food are getting it. And we're hearing about how some of these social service agencies have really had to respond and change quickly to this developing crisis. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. We are unable to take your phone calls today, but you can send us an email. We'd love to hear from you, exchange@nhpr.org, or use Facebook or Twitter. Eileen Laponis is with us for the rest of the hour, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Food Bank. Michael Reinke, Executive Director of the Nashua Soup Kitchen, and Deb Anthony, Executive Director of Gather NH. That's a food pantry serving the seacoast. And Eileen, I did want to pick up with you on something that Deb Anthony mentioned, and that's volunteers. I know all of you rely on volunteers, and yet this is a time when we're all being told to socially distance ourselves. And a lot of volunteers are retired people just because they have the time to do it. So how are you managing that, Eileen?
Well, like everyone else, our volunteers are an age group that is at more risk, and so we want to protect them. So we have put off all our volunteer efforts, except for volunteer efforts in the kitchen, which Chef Jason is in charge of. And there's a number of restaurants that have stepped forward with kitchen help, and so we're containing volunteers to one area just because we are doubling our meal production. But we are first and foremost concerned with the health and safety of our agencies and keeping our distance with them, but we've taken our own employees, and internally we're going to be doing the sorting. We're going to be putting together meal boxes. We anticipate that there's going to be, you know, like the model is changing, and the choice model is not there for health reasons because of the size of the market, so we're also anticipating that we're going to be putting together some family boxes as well.
Wow. And how about you, Michael, on your end? I'm sure you use volunteers as well.
I would guess that at least 70% of our volunteers are over the age of 60. We are seeing dramatic drop-offs of volunteers able to make it in for good reason. We want to keep them healthy. I would say that this is a great time for all hands on deck, and that if you have employers that are allowing people to telecommute and maybe have a flexible schedule, that employers might allow their employees to take an hour or two to go and help a local nonprofit. This would be a great time to make that happen, because we don't want our 70-year-old volunteers coming in and getting sick. I mean, it's a life-threatening situation.
So it's time for perhaps younger people, maybe those who aren't in school, college students who are home,
Absolutely.
To step up, because the retirees just perhaps should not be out there in the numbers that they were in the past. I got a great email from Kathy, who says, is there any chance that the food from all the restaurants that have had to shut down can be donated to places like Gather or food pantries, or will it all be thrown away? Kathy, this is a great question. And Deb, I'll go to you first at Gather NH.
We actually have been the recipients of some really wonderful food items, and we do some cooking as well to repurpose some of the food that we get. So it's been great, and we've gotten UNH, when they closed, sent us a whole bunch of wonderful food. They're like, these are the best green beans we've seen in a long time. So it's been really wonderful, and it's sad. I mean, we've reached out to the restaurant community here in Portsmouth, and because we know some of those tip workers are going to be needing our services. So we're trying to, you know, work together. But the restaurants in our community have been really amazing to us and sending over what they're not going to be able to use. And we're putting it out, and it's going off our shelves really quickly. So we're very happy that we have that kind of collaboration with them.
So what are the logistics of that, Deb? I would imagine, you know, if a restaurant sends you fresh green beans, they're good for a couple of days, but that doesn't last forever.
Right. So, well, we've done a fresh market for so long that we have a really good sort of refrigerator display cases. And so we're able to maintain stuff pretty well. And we also do have a cooking program where we have women and men who cook 3 days a week, and they repurpose food. So if the green beans are on the end of their life, they'll make green bean salad, or they'll do some kind of casserole or soup. And so we've worked really hard to reduce food waste, and so we're kind of good at doing that. So when the food comes in, if we can't put it out in the pantry, or if it's going to be past date, we're going to get it out and cook it and save it for another day. And it also works really well because we have a refrigerator in our lobby, so it's away from everything else. And a lot of the folks who are homeless in our area know about that, and they come in and they pick food to go and leave. So it kind of helps that group of people, and in a really tough time for them as well. So with soup kitchens closing for good reason, they're at least able to access something that they can take back and eat and maintain their health as much as they can.
Well, and Kathy, I love the question because, again, this just happened yesterday, the governor saying that, you know, restaurants could only do to-go. Now, some of them will do fine with that, but some of them will not. Eileen, does that affect you at all?
The restaurants?
Yeah, the fact that, you know, restaurants, Kathy's question, that restaurants are shutting down, are seeing a dramatic drop in their patrons. So does that mean a sudden supply of food for you at the food bank? Or do you guys work more with non-perishable items, you know, dry goods and canned goods and so forth?
No, we work with everything. And we definitely are working, like Gather said, we've already been contacted and received food from some places that have closed down. It's just a matter of food safety and what we can take and not take.
So you have to be careful that it's, you know, obviously usable and safe and so forth. Now, Michael, you're at a soup kitchen, so I'm guessing that you guys are really good at repurposing donated food quickly.
We do. We get donated food from restaurants all the time. One thing that restaurants, your listeners, should be aware of if they're not already, is that a few years ago, the U.S. Congress passed the Samaritan Act, which means that restaurants are held harmless. They are not held liable if they donate food. There are some restaurants that are concerned if they donate food that maybe they'd have some legal responsibility if somebody got sick. Congress said you don't have that. That is not a concern. And so I would just encourage anybody who says, boy, I have food supplies that I've ordered that I'm not going to be able to use right now, donate them to your local pantry, your local kitchen, the food bank, because that food is needed by people here in New Hampshire right now.
Okay. Well, Kathy, thank you for the email. And again, we welcome your emails at exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Eileen, real quick to you, how much have you heard about shortages of food and supplies at other food banks or pantries around the state? You're working statewide with the New Hampshire Food Bank.
Yes, we are the only food bank in the state, so we're the backbone of charitable food distribution. We're part of the network of Feeding America of 200 food banks throughout the country. And like I said before, the supply chain is strong. We're in a good position. By contract, we're required to maintain a healthy inventory. We just happen to be ahead of the ball with this. So we are in a good position. I also want to note that if folks want to find out where they can volunteer or donate food locally, they can go to our website and say find food at that tab and pull down there. And by county or town, find one of our 425 partner agencies. We have two of our strongest hitters on the phone right now with us. But there's 425 of our partner agencies throughout the state, and you can look on our website to find them and either donate food or time there.
Okay, that's great. And I'm so glad you mentioned that. And we will put that information on our website, too, which is nhpr.org. Coming up, more of your emails, and we'll hear more about how vulnerable Granite Staters are getting the food they need during the coronavirus. Again, your emails are welcome. exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, how Granite Staters who are already food insecure are getting what they need during this time of disruption due to the coronavirus. We've been hearing from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter. And for today, since we are all practicing social distancing and everyone is remote today, including myself, we are unable to take your phone calls. But we do want to hear from you. Again, our email, exchange@nhpr.org. All of our guests join us remotely. Eileen Luponis, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Food Bank, Michael Reinke, Executive Director of the Nashua Soup Kitchen, and Deb Anthony, Executive Director of Gather NH. That's a food pantry serving the seacoast. And all of you, we got an email before the break from Eric who wants to know whether he should donate. He says he doesn't want to donate to food banks if you guys are getting a lot of heavy subsidies from the government stimulus package that we talked about earlier from Senator Shaheen. And Michael Reinke, I'll throw that one to you. And Eric, thank you for writing.
I can tell you we are not getting any of the federal stimulus package. But so, yes, 92 cents of every dollar donated goes directly into programs here at NSKS. I believe that is the case for just about every pantry. I mean, The nice thing is that when you donate, it goes directly to helping people. The other thing I would say is that with our partnership with the New Hampshire Food Bank, we are able to get food at a significant discount. I believe, Eileen, it's currently 9 cents a pound. Is that right?
It's going out the door for about 5 cents, actually, but it cannot by contract anything more than 19. We were able to lower it to 9, and it's actually, we keep track of it's going out for a nickel.
There you go. Okay. So we can get food for 5 cents a pound. So if you are interested in donating, donate food if you have it, but if you can make a financial contribution to your local pantry, your local kitchen, do so, and do so today.
Yeah, and a similar email from Craig in Walpole who says... Yeah. A similar email from Craig in Walpole who says, are more donations needed now? Craig says, I want to help those facing financial hardships, but I don't want to donate to this segment, Craig says, if the government will be heavily subsidizing food banks. I'm guessing, Deb, that you're not getting heavy subsidies either, but go ahead. And Craig, thank you for the email as well.
Right. No, we're not. And so absolutely donate to your local food pantries. And also, I mean, I think it is really worth saying that most of the small food pantries do use the food bank. And so while there may be some subsidies that are going to go out, you know, nationally, I think it's really worth saying that we depend heavily. Right now at Gather, we can't get some of the foods that we want from our usual providers. We can't even buy it. So we can't buy extra carrots right now from, you know, some of the places like Walmart that we've been able to at the moment. And so we have to
depend on
the food
bank for
everything.
Why is that, Deb? Pardon me for interrupting.
I think it's their supply chains. Milk and eggs, we give everybody milk and eggs, and that's been our commitment for years, and it's been so hard to get. And so if it weren't for us being able to work through the food bank and use their supply chain, we'd be a lot less prepared for this than we are. But absolutely, you know, I think... You know, I see the people around here, and I think if you have a local food pantry, please support it. I think it's so important in every community, and there's not enough out there to be able to reach everyone that we have already. And this is going to last longer than a few weeks, so people are going to be in serious need.
Well, all right, Eric and Craig, thank you for the emails. And David wrote in, this morning's Concord Monitor listed two people, the owner of Crust and Crumb and a person in Hopkinton, who are making and handing out free breakfast and lunch bags for kids. What great people. Oh, David, thank you very much for writing in with something positive. It's good to hear. And, you know, we talked earlier about kids, and certainly with children out of school for at least 3 weeks, possibly longer. Deb mentioned earlier her efforts driving around the seacoast, delivering meals to kids. Eileen, you first, how is the New Hampshire Food Bank facilitating kids getting the breakfast and lunches that they usually get from school?
Well, we've been working with the New Hampshire DOE closely, and here in Manchester, there's a model that I understand was developed in Barrington where they're going to be using the school bus route system and dropping off meals and homework and picking up homework as well. And that's a model that is really replicating rapidly around the state. We also, with the restaurants and the food trucks that we have relationships with, we are in contact with them and the New Hampshire DOE. If there's an area in need, you know, we may be able to be a site for meal production, and then we can deploy out the food trucks. So we're all working together to think very creatively. And just to answer, if I may, your funding question earlier, we are a food bank of Feeding America, but we receive no state or federal funding. We do not have any of those federal contracts, so we are very dependent upon individual foundations and grants, and that I feel like we are in a relative position of strength, but we are going to need the funding to stay here and keep those supply chains open so that we can supply Deb at Gather and Michael in Nashua.
Wow. Yeah, and Michael, Deb mentioned earlier again, you know, I had that image of her people driving all over the seacoast delivering meals to families whose kids usually get meals from school. Now, what about you at the Nashua Soup Kitchen? Is that something that you guys do, or are you more, we've got the food here, but you folks need to come get it, recognizing that, you know, you may have limited capacity?
Right. So over the last couple of years, our model has evolved. We have started doing a mobile pantry at one of the elementary schools here in Nashua. I believe as of this Friday, we're going to be working on a new partnership where we are going to go up to the food bank, and I believe we've ordered about 700 pounds of fresh produce. We're going to bring it down here, and then the Boys and Girls Club is going to take their vans and bring it to the locations where the Nashua school district is providing bag lunches, and we're going to set up mobile pantries at all of those locations so that parents can come in and make sure that their kids, in addition to having a sandwich and an energy bar, also have fresh fruits and vegetables, because we want to keep our kids healthy and strong. And I believe the United Way is recruiting volunteers to actually person those tables so that when people come up, they can get the vegetables and the produce that they need, and also make sure that there are some available for everybody who comes up.
Wow, really interesting. Well, again, thank you for all those emails. exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. All of you mentioned, you know, concerns around your staff, trying to keep your staff safe. Deb, to you first, as you make those deliveries to families that you mentioned earlier, and that's great, how is your staff being instructed to actually hand out those foods?
So we are doing all the, you know, best practices, and we have more bleach buckets around than you can imagine. But we also are, you know, gloves and masks. I mean, we know that it's, you know, people say, well, the mask doesn't protect you, but we're offering every volunteer and saying, you know, we're also not, we have some volunteers who have let us know that they just came back from travel. If anyone's come in from a level two or level three country, we're asking that they take 2 weeks off from us. And so we're trying to be really cognizant of keeping the contact with people as limited as possible. So in the outdoor market, it's definitely more of a handoff, and here's the ingredients, and you grab your bags and you go. So we're having less contact, and more we're using the bodies to get the food, you know, onto the table so that the families can come up and get it. And again, we're trying to stagger the line so people aren't all clustered in the line. And so we have more people actually controlling the lines than we do people controlling the handing out of the food.
Wow. Yeah, but, as you told us earlier, at your food pantry, you're only allowing two people in at a time. Yeah, go ahead, Deb.
So, I mean, I think it's we put out to everyone, including the people that are on my staff, you know, if you cannot come in, if you have a pre-existing, if you don't feel comfortable doing this, please do not. And we're paying our staff through that if they're out. And then, you know, otherwise, we're just hoping that everybody continues to do the best practices. And we're trying to role model that for everyone that comes and volunteers or works with us. And so far, we've been pretty lucky that people have responded in amazing ways to the call for help. So,
you know, Michael, and ask about your staff, too. You know, we're all being told to work remotely. Some of us can, but, you know, you can't make a meal remotely. I mean, at some point you have to be there making it. So how are you sort of managing that?
Yeah, we are one of the organizations that, you know, you can't do this work from home. I mean, some of our staff we can. Some of the staff that are not involved in direct provision of service, we can say work remotely, but that's very few in number. So we are, again, asking, we do provide sick leave here at the Nashua Soup Kitchen and Shelter. And so we're saying, if you're sick, stay home. And again, we really need people who are under the age of 60. Laura, you mentioned college students who may be home. Great population. This is a great opportunity. We have over 1,000 volunteers at our organization over the course of any given year. It's likely even more than that. And we need our staff kind of sets things up, says, hey, this is what you need to do. It's the volunteers who actually get it done.
Well, really interesting. And Eileen, I wonder if you have seen yet a jump in demand. Now, it's still relatively early in terms of seeing some of the economic impacts, but I wonder if you expect to see a jump in demand, Eileen, for food from the New Hampshire Food Bank and all your partners as people are out of work for an extended period of time. I'm just wondering what you're expecting for Granite Staters who will need food assistance.
We are expecting an increase in demand that will be put on our agencies. Like I said, we're the backbone. There are soldiers in the field, and we're looking to fund that continued need. We feel like the first wave is really going to be the workers that are hit from the food service and hospitality industry. Some of them, you know, they may already be clients of our agencies and aware, but we also want to make them aware of SNAP benefits. So we're going to be sending out to our agencies what the eligibility requirements are for SNAP. So some of those people may apply to that. We also have a SNAP outline so that folks can call if they're having trouble filling out the application. So that's the first wave of what we're anticipating. The hospitality and food service workers are going to be impacted, and they're going to be drawing upon our agencies, and they're also going to be increasing their SNAP participation.
Yeah, SNAP again being food stamps. And I do wonder about, you know, waitresses who rely on tips and so forth. Some food workers will be able to make, you know, meals to go, but there will be a lot of people who are affected. You're absolutely right, Eileen. One listener who filled out our survey at nhpr.org says, I am an independent self-employed massage therapist who is currently unemployed due to the pandemic, and I fear I will be put out of business soon. I have no insurance, benefits, or alternative sources of income. So that's someone who really is incredibly economically vulnerable. Once the clients dry up, that's kind of it. I wonder what kind of increase in demand, Deb Anthony, you're anticipating at Gather NH.
We're seeing, interestingly, a lot of new people just in the past 2 days, and we're only, what, at 10 o'clock this morning almost. So I think we're going to see a pretty significant impact, and we're a little nervous about Meals for Kids because we post on social media, we contact people through texting and let them know where we're going to be, and we had a post that we put up with 10,000 shares, and we're thinking, oh my gosh, they can't all come at once. So I think it's going to be a struggle for all of us. But at the same time, we just keep trying to tell people when they come in to only take what they know they can use, and to be really thoughtful about the next person coming in. And I have to say, I have just been incredibly proud of the members that we have here. And we talked about that at our staff meeting yesterday, and I said, you know, I know these are scary times, but here's the reality. There's a whole lot of people with money going out and stockpiling in their homes because we're scared and we're stressed. I have more toilet paper than I need. But, you know, our folks don't have the money to do that, and they still want to have extra food, and we need to make sure that we treat them with the dignity that we always have, and that we understand that they're going to be acting out of some fear as well. So it's, I think it's going to be interesting, and unfortunately, I think we have a long way to go with this.
Another listener said, after I pay rent next week, I will have $9. Wow. And some food stamps because I am on a fixed income. Time to pray, this listener says, not panic, and to get creative. Thank you to that person for writing in. And wow, the best of luck to you. To all of you, but I think you first, Michael Reinke, what do you want from the state government or the federal government? What sort of action or support would you like to see to help you out at the Nashua Soup Kitchen?
Well, I think that what we're calling on the state government and the federal government to do is provide extra funding to help us with this crisis. So if we're doing meals to go, it's a very different model, and it means we have additional expenses in terms of getting those meals prepared.
Sure, boxes and bags and wrapping, exactly, and so forth, yeah.
And at our shelters, for example, one best practice is to have curtains around the bunk beds so that, you know, people are less likely to spread an illness. Well, we have to go out and get those curtains. So funding for things like that, for additional staff it takes to be able to go out to where the kids are, those kinds of things. This is an emergency. This is what we prepare for. That's what our public sector is out there to do, to make sure in emergencies that we're okay.
What do you think, Eileen? What do you want from the state or federal governments?
I kind of go back to what the cause of hunger is, and it's poverty. And so if folks are going to be experiencing increased levels of poverty to some extent, I don't know how else to put it, but I think that what they're doing now, and we've been in touch with our legislative representatives, that they're looking to extend welfare, extend unemployment benefits, and do everything that they can for employers to support their employees. I think they are doing what we need them to do. And together, if we all pull together and volunteer with these agencies and we keep the funds going to keep the food going to these agencies, we're going to get through this. It's just a matter of months and working together and practicing safe distancing. And I think that, if they continue to reinforce that message, we really can keep the larger effects of this at bay if we all work together.
Michael, did I hear you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, well, just one more thing. What makes Americans Americans, what makes the U.S. great, is our ingenuity, our willingness to come together and help each other. This is the time to make that happen. There was an article in the New York Times about when an earthquake hit Alaska in 1964, people came together. They said, this is in front of us. Let's figure out a way to help. This is the time when we need to come together as a people and say, let's be creative and let's figure out how to address this problem.
And lastly to you, Deb Anthony, what do you want to see from the state government, from the federal government?
You know, I'm hoping that the responses in terms of, you know, trying to tackle the poverty, you know, what's happening with poverty and ensuring that people have access to food stamps and have access to funds if they need them and whatever emergency packages they can put together. And then on top of that, I reach out to the community and say, you know, yesterday people were just randomly donating to gather online. And I think, you know, I hope that the local community continues to do that because we desperately need it. And I hope that the state and federal folks really look at what the people in poverty are going through and figure out a way to keep them out of poverty at desperate levels. So,
all right. Well, and if anyone listening is inspired to help out, to donate or volunteer, lots of links on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Once again, nhpr.org/exchange. Good luck to all of you. Eileen Luponis, Michael Reinke, Deb Anthony, thank you very much for being with us. And my best wishes to you for the weeks ahead. I really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Christina Phillips and Jessica Hunt. Special thanks to RJ Perkins today for getting me up and ready and running to host remotely. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.